One of rock's most distinctive voices, the late James Dewar, the vocalist there. Guitar god Robin Trower, of course, who's still touring these days. The song is called In This Place, spooky, mystical, classic. I thought it would fit our conversation with Bill Grabowski about his new book, Black Light, which, as I said at the beginning of the program, casts a pretty wide net in the paranormal spectrum, looking for connections between a whole bunch of really weird stuff. When we come back, we'll hear from him about his tracking down some of the witnesses to the weirdness in Point Pleasant and what they had to say up close and personal. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. Bill, let's go back and talk a little bit about the witnesses, the eyewitnesses in Point Pleasant. You tracked down a bunch of them, didn't you?
Yeah, I visited there 5 times, and most of the first 2 visits, I was not with my wife Leanne, because I didn't know her yet. But I had a lot of interaction, and at the very first festival, for me anyway, the one that I where I met Keel, the one thing I noticed right away was that the town was divided about how they reacted to the festival. At this point, it was only the second event, and that was the first thing I asked people. So, what do you think of this festival in your town? And it was either, I'm here to get some food and watch people, but regarding Mothman and all that BS, I'm not interested in it. It's just awful. And there were a lot of religious type people who were saying, well, it was a demonic visitation, and the bridge collapsing proved that it was a punishment. And on the other hand, you had the people who were absolutely overjoyed to have this festival there and have some positive attention to the town. And then I started to ask my individually geared questions. I started off with people who were a lot older looking. Because obviously it was at this time it was 2003. With well, just wondering. I'm here in town, and I wondered if you've seen anything during the 2 year span of the phenomenon. And I would say I probably spoke to it was at least 50 people. Out of those 50, probably 40 at least said they had seen UFOs out near. Mostly near the TNT area, which was 7 miles north of town, but also in town. And I was also surprised to hear there were a lot of daylight sightings, which are harder to figure out. And most of those were described as your 60s model silver saucer-shaped craft. There were a few differences, though. One was described as a rectangular, very long object that went over someone's backyard in this was before the Mothman sighting. But yeah, the town was divided, and over the years it seemed to become more accepting. And of course, then by then it was attracting international visitors. There were news teams there from Japan, Germany, and now it's even bigger.
Do you have,
And
though, you have experiences with witnesses who are still frightened to this day? Some of those who
yes.
may have seen the Mothman himself?
Yeah, some of them I spoke to. There weren't a whole lot of people who said they saw the Mothman entity, but the few who said they did, when someone's looking you in the face, it's hard to say, well, I think you're full of it. Which in a few cases I was certain, but not in the others, where the way it was described was so the descriptions were so flat. I was taking out my garbage, and I saw what I thought was an owl, and went into the woods and saw that it wasn't an owl. This was in the TNT area, because there are actual homes there. They're scattered, but it's so isolated. But anyhow, most of the reports I heard of the actual sightings of the Mothman entity came from that area. And also there were a few who said they were driving to, there was a drive-in theater at the time across the river in Gallipolis, Ohio. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. Actually, the Silver Bridge used to lead right over there, and they had seen it on the way to a drive-in theater in flight.
So back to your idea, you had mentioned briefly that you thought one idea that you explore in the book is that maybe this is there were some incident reports, something, people saw something like a Mothman, other people saw a UFO, someone in the government thought, aha, this is a great place to test out X, whether it's MK Ultra or pulling their chain or whatever the program would be called. What is your evidence for that? What do you... What leads you to the conclusion at least some of this was humans messing around?
Well, the first thing was just where Point Pleasant is located. It's within 200 miles of three Air Force bases, Wright-Patterson in Dayton, Lockbourne, which I think now is called Rickenbacker Airfield, outside of Columbus, Ohio, and then Oakdale, which is southwest of Pittsburgh. So that kind of rings a bell right there for aerial activity, especially Wright-Patterson being so close and known for, you know, basically a hive of aerial experimentation. And also the Ohio River access, so they had easy air access, easy water access. And some of the early reports about men in black, for one thing, it wasn't mentioned in Keel's book, and I'm not sure he knew it or not, but he probably did. A lot of insurance offices were visited by men in black, and I found out that insurance offices often have blueprints for local companies. They had blueprints for the nuclear power plant that was going up in Point Pleasant. And it seems that given this was the Cold War, some of these men in black may have been spies who wanted to look, or at least discredit people who reported them, and hence their bizarre behavior and their stuttering and acting like they're drunk. And the whole thing about where the men in black visited and what was available there, that was kind of a red flag to, you know, just flat out human involvement. And of course, there are a lot of factories around Point Pleasant still today that produced exotic ceramics, metal, and other things used in the defense industry. So as far as the possibility for spying and espionage, it was wide open.
And if it's outgrowth of MK Ultra, as you postulate, right, you don't prove it, but you postulate it and suggest it might be possible, what would be the purpose of that? Just to see if they could do it?
To see if it's possible to do, I guess I would call it mythological engineering, to see the effects on people. And again, I think it started with actual so-called paranormal phenomena with the Mothman sightings, and then could have been further exploited. And another thing is Point Pleasant, is also not very far from the intelligence infrastructure in Washington, D.C. and in Alexandria, Virginia, not very far at all.
You know, Nick Redfern, who's Nick Redfern's our guest in next hour, he had came up with a document, a RAND Corporation document, where they studied it on behalf of the Air Force, the idea of mythological creatures creating sort of a mythology just to see if they can get away with it, manipulate the public opinion, public mood.
Yes. Yeah, also sociological engineering, because there was talk of, it could have been in the same study, about trying to cast an image of Jesus on the clouds. They wanted to use this over Cuba to basically freak out people, because obviously a lot of Catholics in Cuba, that was mentioned. I think the actual instrument is called a Mitralux, which casts an immensely powerful beam and basically any image you want, which it sounds almost laughable, but you never know. If people are terrified, the perceptions are heightened and emotions take over, and they can color things, they can project things onto it, which may very well have happened in some of the entity sightings of Mothman and Thunderbirds.
But as you say, that does not explain all of it. It certainly didn't explain it for Keel, who,
No.
you know, a lot of people would have classified him as a ufologist at points in his career. He, I think he referred to himself as a demonologist. I think you mentioned that in the book. I
Yes,
mean,
he did.
is that a literal sort of a way? Is that his explanation for paranormal in general, is that it's demonic?
Well, like a lot of the things Keel said, I think there was a lot more metaphor involved and not so much literalism. But in his worst moments, when he was besieged with these phone calls, and a lot of which were threatening, he said there is definitely a demonic element in how the phenomena affects you. If you're once you step into the link, you're part of it, and there can be a reflexive effect where things come back on you. For instance, he would ask a so-called entity a question, a phone voice, and a lot of the times he was convinced he was receiving these phone calls from someone in like a post-hypnotic state, because often they would say, "Hey, so-and-so is standing here right next to me," like in the movie where Gordon Smallwood's character, played by Will Patton, says, "I have Indrid Cold's right here with me on the phone."
Right.
And they would make claims, and then Keel thought that he was going to lose his mind because some of the things they said to him came true, or they just knew details that would be very difficult to know unless you were in someone's mind. And also, there were incidents in Point Pleasant and nearby with people hearing voices, and there were tests of microwave. Called microwave hearing, even in the late 50s, about how to broadcast a voice into someone's head, either for military purposes to give direction or drive people mad. So there is some outside documentation on these things.
You know, what appealed to me about Keel's central sort of message is that he looked at the UFO mystery and saw beyond just nuts and bolts saucers. With the prevalent view at the then and maybe even now, is it extraterrestrials? These are beings from other planets visiting us in craft, and he saw it as something else, that that maybe this goes a lot beyond just something as simple as that, which Jacques Vallée has written extensively about it, and tying into a lot of other kind of mysteries, other kinds of creatures, that it seems to be some sort of a grand design, sort of almost like a play or theater, to mess with us, either to educate us or to bring us along or just to really pull our chain. In your book, you say, there's a section where you go, "In my estimation, Keel summed up what all others have missed. UFOs, paranormal phenomena are real, they exist, and are a normal aspect of our environment. What they might actually be, we do not and probably cannot know." Is that sum it up for you?
Yes. Yeah. Of course, the part about we may never know or we can't know, that is my personal opinion, because look how long it's been studied, and basically we come up with theories. Very little can be proven. But especially Jacques Vallée, I believe he actually states, in those words, this is stage management here. This is
it's a control system.
Theater.
Yeah, it's a control system.
It's theater, but it's frightening theater. And I believe he and Keel pretty much arrived. They pretty much both trashed the extraterrestrial hypothesis in the mid '60s when they, after extensive research, they came to these conclusions. These cannot be. Although Vallée says the craft are physical, but they're not real, which is hard to wrap your brain around. That's how can someone be physical? How can something be physical but not be real? And he has a more of a being French, there's more of a surrealistic angle to Vallée's theories than to Keel. But Keel, obviously, I think they were I'm not going to say they were pals, but they were definitely on the same page regarding the, I guess you would call it, the psychosocial theory.
See these cases. Some of the cases were coming up on an anniversary of the Hopkinsville UFO case, where these aliens
Yes.
showed up, and it's like a shooting gallery. It is so preposterous on its face. Some of the stuff that happened at the Utah Ranch, so ridiculous as to you don't even want to mention it. And then Point Pleasant and some of the experiences there. It is so preposterous and over the top that it's almost designed to look like no one could ever possibly believe this, to stretch the limits of our credulity. Obviously, you've thought about that.
Yes. Yeah, that was when I first read about Men in Black, for instance. Over and over, I'm seeing, okay, they have trouble breathing. They make absurd statements. What time is it? What is your time? And would intelligent creatures do this? And then reading Vallée, where he says, well, hey, maybe there is a reason for this absurd theater, whatever you want to call it. It's meant to cause cognitive dissonance. It's meant to affect you emotionally with a powerful series of images that are going to sink into you, and you won't be able to forget them, in order to program consciousness, raise, heighten evolution. That was part of Valley's series, the control system hypothesis. And I think Keel mostly agreed with that. But not so much. Keel's take on it was far darker than Vallée. Keel was more about, I don't think they care about us at all. They're just tampering because they can. It's not meant for any sort of transformative effect. Where Vallée thought that, possibly this external whatever it is, intelligence, is actually trying to have an effect on us. But the way we see it is, it's a live wire. If you touch a live wire, you're going to get electrocuted. And the phenomenon can present itself that way and may not even be hostile. It's something beyond we have no model for it, how to interact with it. And so when we do, it comes out as either terrifying or, on the other hand, has a beneficial effect on people's lives. They come away from it with new talents, like author Andy Colvin mentioned, who lived near the Point Pleasant area,
Yeah, I've had him on the program. He was a good
right,
guest, yeah.
probably numerous times, I think. And he mentioned that acquiring artistic skills after some unusual experiences.
Well, it just seems like in the big picture, the positive me wants to say it's a learning curve of some sort. They're trying to tell us something. We're not quite smart enough to figure it out, but maybe we just need a little more info. The negative part of me says this is a diversion. This is a circus to keep us busy and occupied. It's opium for the masses, keeping us trying to figure out what the twinkly lights in the sky are, while they, whoever they are, carry out whatever it is their agenda might be.
Yeah, I would have to say I'm on that page as well, because I have the practical side, and then I have the fantastical side that writes horror fiction, and those two feed each other. And then I try and back away from both and say, well, how do I feel about this as a human being? I've been asked a few times, well, yeah, of course you must be an atheist. Well, no, I'm not an atheist. Because that is like the ultimate cop out to me. That's like just committing spiritual suicide. We can't explain ourselves, so therefore you can't rule out an intelligence other than us. And I think we project our despair onto it, our hope onto it, and therefore it manifests the way that it does now. And now with we have dominating influence of the internet, right? And our collective unconscious or subconscious. It's projecting new fears. We have the
Yeah, it's
power
the
to want
cosmic Rorschach test or something.
to. Yeah, what a way to put it. That is exactly it. We're
When we
being
come back,
presented a.
when we come back, I'll open up the phone line, see what folks have on their mind, and maybe I'll go back to this term demonologist, whether Keel believed there were demons that intervene in our lives. The late Alvin Lee, and 10 years after, from 1972, take us into the break. powerhouse song from the Foo Fighters called Outside. And if you just heard the line of the lyrics, there's something out there. And yes, there is. Joe Walsh contributed to that song, by the way. Big week for Foo Fighters, final act on the David Letterman show, if you saw that. And this is a terrific album. The name of the song is Outside Again, and you should check out the lyrics sometime. Look them up. We're talking with Bill Grabowski. When we come back, we open up the phone lines with a couple of your questions and comments about some of the weird trails he's been down, and much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. Before we open the phone lines up, Bill, I wanted to ask you mentioned about the Will Patton character in the movie, the Mothman Prophecies. And I remember in the movie he committed suicide. Was there any suicide? Did any of the witnesses get so troubled that they took their own lives?
Only accounts I know of are those mentioned by Keel in Mothman Prophecies, and I think he also mentions it in Disneyland of the Gods. And he doesn't name names, of course, but he said that there were suicides. And then, of course, Mary Heyer, the Point Pleasant Register reporter, died sort of suspiciously in 19, I think it was 1970. And she either just made a phone call or just received one, and she was found dead in her home. And she was not that old. I think she was 54 or 55.
I mentioned before that the Keel had sometimes referred to himself as a demonologist.
Yes.
And does he mean that in a literal sense of there are demons that intervene in our lives, or did he mean it in a more generic sense that whatever this thing is, this intelligence that intervenes in our lives, that it is evil?
I think he meant that whatever these entities are, that they behave, that their effect on us is can be demonic, as in causing terror and seemingly outright hostility, negative influence. Yeah, I don't think he meant as in devils and Beelzebub, in the literal way, but I think he meant it as possibly was meant even in the Bible, as these things are negative, and people call them certain things at certain times in our culture.
And I promise this will be the last thing I ask, and then a lot of people are on the phones waiting to talk to you. But you mentioned in the book, which I haven't mentioned it enough, but it's called Black Light. You should really check it out, folks. Bill Grabowski really lays it out there. But you mentioned that the government, you speculate on the government, and I'm sort of in the same spot as you, that there is not going to be any big revelation because chances are pretty good they don't know a whole lot more than the rest of us.
That is precisely what I think. That it's been going on far too long of pointing the finger at the government, because for one thing, it invests them with this godlike power that, given how bureaucracies function, it cannot structurally work that way. And plus, if you think of the money that would be required for certain effects, that when you look back on them. What did they accomplish? They scared a lot of people. Yeah, they sure did. And they probably learned a lot of things. But as far as, are they responsible for all of this? No. The problem now is we have drone technology, which is really, really confusing the issue of UFOs. And you've probably seen as many videos as I have that look profoundly strange until you look at them again, and then hear some further reports that, well, that was actually a new kind of drone that has cameras on it. They're being used by people making films, and if you see it at night, it looks very strange.
I think because of drone technology, because of CGI, special effects technology available to anyone with a laptop, that UFO videos, for all intents and purposes, the evidential value of them are way down. Way down.
Yeah, that's going even deeper and deeper into the hole. It's like every time I see one new evidence, I'm like, oh brother, here we go. Just like, these images from Mars. But yeah, as far as the UFO footage you're seeing on YouTube and elsewhere, some of which looks very, very convincing, probably 99% of it is somebody having a good time, and there are even apps for your phone.
Yeah, the government doesn't have to make it up anymore.
No.
The people online are happy to do it and confuse
Yeah.
it and muddy the waters all themselves. Let's take a couple of phone calls. East of the Rockies Carl in Rochester, New York. Hi, Carl. You're on with Bill Grabowski.
Hello, gentlemen. Yes, I'm very interested in what you were saying about the technology to project images in the clouds.
Yes.
That technology is 25 years old. I mean, 25 years ago, they knew how to do that,
Yes,
project small
absolutely.
images.
Yeah,
What I doubt they stopped. I doubt they stopped with the technology. So imagine what they can do now.
absolutely. That's part of my point is that they were talking about using this against Cuba during the missile crisis. That is a long time ago, and yeah, now it's probably whatever it is, it's probably perfected, holographic imagery, 3D holographic projection.
Yeah, well, I go to this thing with the Iran. They're scaring everybody. They got technology in the space that could detect a missile launch before it even gets out of the silo. 25 years ago, they could read your license plate number from 25,000 miles in space.
Easily, yes.
Imagine what they have now.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's obviously much more sophisticated now with facial recognition software.
Carl, thanks. We appreciate the point. I should also point out, Bill, in your book, you mentioned about MK Ultra, which, as we all know, that stopped. So I'm sure the government completely stopped that kind of research. They're not doing anything like that anymore, right?
Yeah,
Yeah.
I agree. My
What?
fingers crossed behind my back.
Yeah. West of the Rockies, Archer in Hawaii. Hi, Archer. You're on with Bill Grabowski.
George and Bill. George, I'd like to ask your guest to comment in a little more detail about two things that I think go hand in hand: perception management and predictive programming.
Oh. Bill, you want to take a shot at that?
When you did you say predictive programming?
Predictive programming, perception management in the service of predictive programming. Are you familiar with that term, that concept?
I might not be, or I might know it by a different term.
Yeah, it's sort of what you're describing in the book, Bill, I think, is ultimately they're using all kinds of mind control and technology to lead the people to some place where they want us to go.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Then I misunderstood. You mean it actually? Okay, trying to do some sociological manipulation here.
Well, it's in a way laying the seeds for things to come in such a way that the bizarre won't be so bizarre, but rather recognized in advance of
I
if
see. You mean
you
it in we're being pre could possibly be being prepared for whatever may come in the future, so it will not overwhelm us.
That's true. Yes, that's what I was referring to.
Okay, I apologize. I misunderstood you at first.
Well, my apologies. I have yet to have the opportunity to read your book, but I fully intend to. Thank you.
You're
Thanks.
welcome.
Yeah, it raises interesting possibilities that the people who are in this kind of business are a lot better at it than we are at ours, and they can see a lot further down the road and what the ultimate goal might be and preparing us for whatever might still be to come.
And also, no oversight on the budget for depending on what the project might be.
Yeah, I'm watching this debate about, Rand Paul is having a monopolizing time on the floor of the Senate, thinks
Yes.
wants to draw attention to the extension of the Patriot Act and the NSA spying on all of us, and he's asking, where is the outrage? And I'm asking the same question, where is the outrage
Yeah.
about authorizing them to spy on everyone? Why aren't we up in arms about that? How can we possibly think that it's that this is a good thing? And it occurs to me that even if the Senate did not approve or the Congress did not vote to approve it, they could do it anyway, and there's not much we could do to stop them.
Yeah, this has been proven. I mean, there's an excellent book by James Bamford. It's about the NSA. It's called The Shadow Factory, where he goes into excruciating detail about how they get around these laws. And in a lot of cases, they just say, "Well, we need to know these things. We're going to do them anyway." And people, the public has been very sheepish about accepting this in the guise of national security. Like, everything is dangerous now and we'll protect you, but we need this information and we need to spy on you all the time.
Well, I think this is an example of what Archer was sort of getting at in that last call, is they've been seeding this kind of imagery for a long time. Be afraid, be very, very afraid. Give us the authority to do whatever we want. Thank you very much. And then once you give up those rights, there's no going back. Anyway, I don't want to get on a soapbox. I'm going to go back to the phone lines. First-time caller, Alan in Sacramento. Alan, welcome to the program. You're on with Bill Grabowski.
Hey, how you gentlemen doing today?
Howdy.
Hi, Alan.
How you doing? Hey, I have a question to ask. Have you ever read this book called The Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion?
I have read the, I don't know if it's the full document, but it's in the late William Cooper's book, Behold a Pale Horse.
Yeah, well, you know, I see that there's a lot of somewhat truth in that book, because, like, how society is, like, dummied up with distractions, and while, you know, the agenda, whatever, is being pushed through right up under our noses. And I think that's a good read for people. But anyhow, my main question was, is that, have you ever experienced any phenomena with nature, with UFO sightings? Because there's been a lot of birds dying around in the Sacramento area.
Well, maybe another way to ask that question, if you don't mind, Alan, is anything since the penguin that would be in the paranormal realm happened to you personally, Bill?
Yeah.
Yes. There's a sighting I mentioned in my book of, I'm not sure what, in 1992, I worked for a test and instrumentation company in Solon, Ohio, which is a suburb of Cleveland. And on my lunch break, which was in the evening, I saw two very bright white lights separated by about 300 feet. And then at first I thought they were helicopters, and then I saw they were attached to a solid object. So right away that established it as at least the size of a dirigible, a blimp. And not being too far from Akron, Ohio, where the Goodyear at least used to be housed, that's what I thought it was until I got back to the parking lot and watch the lights rotate and then disappear into the clouds. And after that, I have no idea what it was. Was it a military prototype? More likely than an extraterrestrial craft or something like that. But that was one instance, and that's, I go into more detail about that in the book.
Alan, thanks for the call. Going to the wild card line, Dennis in Philadelphia. Hi, Dennis. You're on with Bill Grabowski.
Good morning. Yes, hi.
Howdy.
It just seems that there's more here than just government programs and so forth. I mean, this thing has been, I don't know if this is true or not, but it was seen before 911. It was seen before another bridge went down. It's been seen all around the world. It's been seen in Canada, Ohio. It's been seen in Texas. I mean, it's been seen all around the world. Is this like a harbinger of what's to come, you know, when something bad is just about ready to happen? I mean, or it just seems like it's that this is beyond anything involved with the some government program or anything like that.
Well, my reflection on that is, yeah, there are reports of Mothman type entities. One of which is false, though. It was claimed to be seen in Chernobyl, and that didn't happen. But however, you mentioned Texas. There are a few other reports. It was even seen in Greensburg, Pennsylvania, near where I used to live. And investigator Stan Gordon looked into that. But there does seem to be some kind of a correlation, like, you know, harbinger of doom is a good way to put it. But not that these things, you know, cause the accidents or tragedies. But it almost seems to be a forward reflection of collective unconscious and everything we fear. And these go back to like the screaming banshees from Irish folklore. But
you know, you write about Carl Jung.
Carl Jung, yes.
The whole idea about us projecting, it's a projection of consciousness. You know, a lot of folks would say Jung wrote off UFOs. They're not true. It's just we're imagining them. That's really not an accurate description, though, of what he had to say.
What about the foot perched atop above the bridge before it went down? Is that a fake photograph, or is that a real photograph? Somebody did somebody did snap a photograph of the flying in the air over New York City before 911, and there's one on top of the bridge over in Point Pleasant. Are they?
I have seen the picture, though, both of those pictures, and the one you mentioned on the bridge that went over the Ohio River, I think that was in Ironton, Kentucky, not far from Point Pleasant. And then I've also seen the photo taken in New York City, both of which look very strange and pretty convincing. But again, with a photo, you can never prove anything. It could be the most convincing photo of all, but it really doesn't prove anything. And you hope it's not faked, but there's really no way to determine that without a complete analysis and then provenance of where the pictures came from. But it is fascinating.
Okay, thanks a lot for your time. Appreciate it.
Thanks for the call, Dennis.
You're welcome.
James in South Carolina on the wild card line. Hi, James.
Hi, James.
Hello? Hey, James, are you still there?
Hello?
Hello, you're on with Bill Grabowski.
Hi, Bill.
Hi, James.
I have a question. Why do aliens abduct people or livestock?
I don't know.
You're talking about the mutilations?
What'd you say? I didn't hear you.
Oh, well, let's start with abductions. You have any idea about abductions? I think you do touch on that, don't you?
Yes, I do. Regarding those, I think that there, some of them at least, are, let's just say, misperceived night terrors, sleep paralysis. Having had two incidences of sleep paralysis myself, not with an abduction, but with a sighting of something that obviously was a dream creature, I don't think there's a reality behind abduction, at least in the matter of our extraterrestrials taking us. I think it's a symptom of something else, not necessarily mental disease either. I think it's another example of projection, a trauma projection, a despair. And then there are people who claim to have had positive experiences from a so-called ETH abduction.
You think any of those experiences are military, intelligence, MK Ultra type stuff that people are led to believe that they've been? Yeah. I mean, have you got an example of one that what you would say definitely falls in that category?
There, I put one in the book that was. I don't want to waste time flipping through it here, but anyhow, it was an individual who said that he was out camping and was hit by a strange light and came to in a blue van that he was positive was a Navy van, not Navy blue as in naval, and was taken to just a normal facility somewhere, and then was later visited a psychiatrist who unfortunately used hypnotic regression, which is not a reliable tool because it causes confabulation, and had a full-blown memory of your typical abduction and examination and the trauma that causes.
Quickly before we go, so in essence, there could be the government messing with us, the government putting a lot of this stuff in our heads, jacking us around, pulling our chain, but that doesn't account for all of it. There really is something out there.
No, it does not account for all of it. It can't possibly. And that's the aspect of the high strangeness, where there's some things we may never figure out, or we may in decades from now, but there is that small percentage that just cannot be explained through.
All right, Bill Grabowski, thanks for coming on the show, and we'll have you back. The book is called Black Light. It's an excellent read, folks. Check it out. Thanks, Bill. ZZ Top takes us into the break. In a moment, Nick Redfern with The Secret History of Conspiracies. Stick around.